So how about let's go into a little bit about claims or credentials. We kind of talked about that a little bit earlier in the episode. So
it's just that. It's someone claiming something. So, I mean, this could be very, very simple. Like party A claims that party B is awesome.
Well, let's use a diploma as an example. How about that? That's something.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. So party A could be the university. And then party B is the student, and they're claiming that party B completed a Bachelor of Science in Computer Engineering or whatever. And then that would be it, basically, right? So, I mean, you know, a claim could be very simple, so, or it could be, you know, could be more complex. Now, in terms of how that claim is actually issued, stored, and used, there's some flexibility around that. One way that this could work is basically you could issue a claim in a claims registry, that where it would save it on a blockchain. Inside of that claim on the blockchain, you could have a hash, and you could have that hash reference something that happened or some outside piece of data that's not stored on chain. We're not trying to put any personally identifiable information on a public ledger. So by using the hash, we can reference claim the more specific data and have that accessible somewhere else. So one of the solutions that has been sort of in development for this is called an identity hub. So an identity hub would work alongside DIDs, claims, and credentials as a way to manage data, right? So let's say if you actually had a scan of that diploma. So the hash would reference that data object. You could provide access to that data, you know, selectively, right? So someone could, in theory, like request data for that. Maybe let's say they're using their own DID, right? So DID of this other third party is requesting to access your data, and then you could grant that or deny that. So the hash referencing it could be posted on chain. Where this gets actually a bit more interesting and useful is if you have people who are consuming these claims without requiring the personally identifiable data, and just trusting the claim as it is, right? So if I have this claim that says, yeah, I have PhD in, you know, biochemistry or something, that could be public there, right? Just the saying that, okay, PhD in biochemistry. It's not really anything like, you know, tying that to me personally still. Other people could consume that and trust that still without having to, let's say, you know, go through the process of actually verifying that document or going through additional steps, just being, okay, well, you know, this DID has got this claim attached to it. This claim says that he's got this degree. We're going to trust that and accept that and consume that. So yeah, it depends, right? And then both the requirements of the relying parties and, you know, this what specific types of claims data is available.
Ben brings a very important point, that is that claims allow to manage like different levels of disclosure. One of the challenges of these identity systems is how to provide all of these levels of control to the identity owner and security and verifiability without exposing unnecessary or too much information, identity information. That's a big challenge for many of these systems. When we talk about public claims, there are many cases for public claims, such as the one previously mentioned about STO contract being able to check on this information on-chain, for example. But for many cases, the scenario is likely to be that the identity owner shares this claim object in private, via private channel, and that's only between the identity owner and the relying party. The hash, as Ben mentioned, of this claim object can be stored on-chain. An external party checks this blockchain and it cannot deduct any information. It cannot even understand what does this mean. It's just, at most, it knows that this DID said something about this other DID. Doesn't know anything else. Still, the relying party, if gets hold of this object off-chain, can verify, like hashing this object and verifying it on-chain, can know that this was created at certain date and hasn't been revoked. Maybe the university made a mistake and wants to revoke this credential, they can do so just by interacting, because they are the issuer should be able to revoke credential, a claim made by them. Getting a little bit into the terminology, tends to speak interchangeably between claim and credential. Claims is a general form of what we're talking about. It's just someone saying something about something. So it's just claims. It is verifiable because it is cryptographically signed by a key that's associated to a DID and so on. You cannot go wrong by just referring to them as claims. Credentials has this connotation of authority behind it. Good use of the term when we're talking about these cases for like a university, not like just someone saying that someone else is cool. It is an authority making a claim that has some importance to someone. It has some level of like officialness. In our system, we'll have these mechanisms that ensure only certain certifiers, certain actors can make some specific types of claims. And in this context, we might talk about credentials and we wouldn't be wrong. But like claims is a general term for it. And so we can always talk about claims and not go wrong with it.
To sort of summarize that, you could say all claims are claims and some claims are credentials.
Going back a little bit, what are the benefits of putting something on an identity hub versus just on-chain on an address? Like, what's the pros and cons of that? I didn't really get that.
The stuff that you have on-chain, you want that to be not personally identifiable information. Looking at like reference hashes or, you know, very, very basic information. Whereas an identity hub could store actual data, like your passport scan, gotcha, your driver's license scan, utility bills, like Identity Hub or whatever access sort of platform that you've got integrated there. That could basically sort of work in tandem with the claim. So the claim could have a reference hash, and then that reference hash could also be in your Identity Hub referencing, you know, data item X or, you know, PDF Y or something.
Gotcha. And who owns the Identity Hub or...
Oh, you do. Yeah, that's...
I think it's a good idea if we talk a little bit more about hubs, like maybe we haven't touched on this subject too much, because we have this distributed ledger, these blockchains taking care of the identifiers, maybe some cryptographic proofs such as claim hashes and so on. Question is, where do we store the actual information, right? And how do we share it? Identity hubs are storage and computation layer, these decentralized identifiers. So it's just basically component that allows you to store information and share with only entities that the owner, the controller of this hub authorizes. It's a very abstract concept. I mean, in Selfkey platform, for example, the user is running a digital wallet, an ID wallet, and this wallet would be acting as a identity hub. You could do more than that. You could implement, for example, backup services in cloud, online services that you can back up your data with or replicate data on different devices. This is sort of like a layer that solves that problem. Where do you store safely information? How do you share it? If Reliant Party is running an identity hub, it's just a matter of authorizing access to certain object within your hub to a certain DID. So that DID hub of the hub running that DID could replicate that data, access that data remotely. Maybe if you're not online, you could have your data synchronized with an on-chain service that's running also a hub that's under your control, and that allows some of your information to be available even if you're the user. It's not online.
Right, because you don't want to store files, or you can't store files on the blockchain.
You cannot, you should not. Yeah, basically the difference to sort of answer the previous question is that anything on-chain is public. Identity hubs are meant to be self-sovereign and are meant to be under control only of certain parties and have all these permissioning layers built in it as well. So it allows you more privacy over who can see what and how to deal with data.
If you talk about like the, you know, storing data on-chain, right, you could use something like IPFS to store a file there, right? But the thing here is that you just wouldn't want to, right? You wouldn't want to put your passport public place, right? Even if it is like encrypted, that encryption is only good until it's not good.
Yeah.
Right. And then a DID can reference both to Identity Hub and like different blockchains too. It could all be under the DID, right?
Yes. Identity Hubs, the most of this work done on Identity Hubs is currently being made by the DIF, the Decentralized Identity Foundation. Mm-hmm. So it's like a sort of like sum of different companies working to develop these components regarding decentralized identity. The goal of this is that there's lots of systems, lots of platforms being developed. We have to achieve interoperability between all these different platforms by standard protocols and components. So Identity Hubs is one of these components that's aiming to become sort of a standard between different identity systems.
Earlier, we talked about registries too. How does this tie into this?
The registry would just be where these on-chain claims would be stored. We're actually having a little bit of an internal debate about how to implement these claims registries in accordance with sort of what we're doing at SelfKey. The long and the short of it is that the claims that are stored on-chain would at the very least have we call like an issuer and a subject. So the issuer would be the person who's issuing the claims, whatever identifier that happens to be, whether it's a DID or otherwise. And then the subject, the one who is, you know, having the claim attested to. And then that would, again, they would have an identifier, DID or otherwise, some sort of a value there. So, you know, saying what the claim object is, whether that's just a simple reference hash, or maybe like a Boolean or something.
Why would I store something on a registry versus on-chain?
It needs to be discoverable, you know, in some cases. So when we're talking about this STO use case, that process needs to be automated. So there can't be a process where a human needs to make a request and then another human needs to make a response. Right. So like, for example, if I wanted to go ahead and go through that process to purchase an STO token, right? That needs to be able to check that claim that I'm not an American citizen automatically. If you are just doing the diploma, like your university diploma degree, it's quite possible that it would be acceptable for that to be a human making the request and then me granting access to my identity hub to that file manually, right? In that case, you wouldn't actually necessarily need a claims registry at all. Still, you could just basically go through the identity hub directly and, you know, request that data and then provide that data. When you have a trusted authority that's issuing these claims, then we can just go and trust the claim explicitly without having to right. reference any of the data behind it, right? And that's where the real sort of kind of the power lies, right? Where it's speeding things up and it's making things way more convenient and opening up more different use cases, because, you know, when things can be automated, that opens up a lot of possibilities as opposed to requiring a sort of a manual intervention step.
Going back to STOs, basically you could use this for like a whitelist registry, right? Like for your accredited investors and non-US people.
Yeah, exactly.
Once they've done it, you could build this list and then you can use that to do your fund management yourself. Okay, I see.
Yeah, there's a few different ways that, like, you know, you could set that up technically, but yeah, more or less.
Good thing about these claims and credentials and so on is that they have the power to be reused. After an STO ends, if other party trusts these claim issuers, they can reuse this information on-chain. So in this case, that this is on-chain, solves many problems on the KYC context. Presently, identity owners have to go through KYC for multiple times for different parties and submit the same information again and again. So the point is that credential is granted. If a claim is made, the issuer is trusted by another actor. They don't have to perform the same checks again, because the information can be proven to have been verified previously.
Right. I think we talked about this internally too. Right? It's like if you have a bank account at HSBC and Bank of China, if this was public and kind of like in a registry, why couldn't you just go to Standard Chartered and be like, hey, I have these two accounts I've proven with. Why do I have to do KYC again, right? That's like sure. the ideal future.
We could use the example of like these exchanges too, right? So, I mean, I've signed up for, I don't know, 20 some odd exchanges probably. And each, you know, each time that you want to get set up for an account that's able to do like, you know, fiat withdrawals to your bank account, you have to go through the KYC process, right? And they're all pretty similar. So let's say if you have 10 exchanges that all have the exact same KYC requirements, right? Or KYC process. Rather than having to go through and do that process 10 times, you could do it one time, and then the 9 other exchanges can just agree to accept the claim that's issued from the first exchange, right? And then vice versa. So if any of those 10 exchanges, they onboard someone that's new, and then they go through that KYC process, then they can issue a claim to the network saying that, okay, user X, you know, this DID went through our KYC process successfully and achieved this status, or, you know, whatever, like, you know, that reference can again be tied back to what the specific processor was, or, you know, what the claim type is, right? And then the other ones can just sort of consume that, right? So that speeds it up for the users, and it speeds it up for the exchanges. Also saves them money too, right? So for example, I mean, if you're going through and doing like some special kinds of, you know, verifications or checks, I mean, you know, that can cost quite a bit of money for each user that you're putting through, right? So if you didn't have to pay for all of those checks and were instead able to just trust a claim about them, then that's, you know, the cost savings become exponential for everyone. It's like, it's a win-win situation.
Like if I wanted to send a transaction, but have four people approve it, could I look at a registry and be like, are these four people on this list before I approve it? And if not,
well, I think in that case, we talk about like a multi-sig transaction. Yeah. Could have a DID and then a claim about the status of that person saying like they are CEO and they're CFO or something, right? You could have a DID for everyone in your company, right? And then you could have a claim saying like what their job role is. You know, that would be possible, yeah.
Now for a multi-signature wallet, perhaps the example, it's a little bit of overkill to use a claims registry for that. Nothing rules out the possibility to interact. If we have these on-chain claims somehow, the possibility for any other on-chain company and any contract to interact to consume information, it could be done. Like you could have complex multi-signature functionality. Maybe it's not like a wallet owned by a corporation, but maybe it's something bigger like a community. Three DIDs have to authorize certain decision, and these actors have to have certain type of claim and still valid at the time. So nothing concrete right now to have as a use case, but certainly can be used that way.
So in the end, it's all endpoints that you can just program to.
Yeah. One thing to add in that regard is that we might say there are two gaps that still need to be filled. One is, how does the relying party trust, how is trust determined from the relying party to these different issuers? And that's basically up to each relying party who they decide to trust. The second question is, how do we trust that the DID belongs, in fact, to the entity that we expect, that we trust? You might have a credential issued by a university, but in the end, what we have is just DIDs working as claims signed by keys associated to DIDs in a public ledger. So how do you tie the DID to this specific entity, in this case, a university? And that's sort of an unsolved problem still. I mean, in the end, you cannot eliminate trust completely. Like you could have, at least you have to trust maybe the entity website where they state what their DID is. And you still have to trust that website as hasn't been hacked. So how do you tie that gap? How do you bridge that? Still needs to be defined. Like trust, it is my view that trust cannot be entirely eliminated.
Right. So if I have a credential signed by Columbia University, how do I know that this DID that signed it is actually owned by Columbia, right?
Yeah.
Or you could also flip that around and, you know, let's say if Columbia University, they have a legitimate DID, right? And then they lose key to that controls the DID to that university, and then just starts, you know, issuing, you know, I'm going to give myself 10 PhDs or whatever, right? And they'll all be signed by like the real Columbia DID, right? But because they lost control of their private key, right? So how do you stop something like that from happening and corrupting the system?
Multisig solves some of those problems, and it is our expectation that most of our identity related functionality rests on these identity contracts and not just simple addresses working as identities. That's something we allow as a simple case and gives us some flexibility and removes some friction points. But in the end, I think the ideal is that identities are managed through identity contracts such as the ERC 725 standard. One of the other branches of work we're engaging right now is these corporate identities. I think there's a strong case for corporate organizations to have these control a DID. It becomes harder for just someone to steal a private key, because that private key doesn't have entire control over the whole identifier. In this case, there's a whole structure of keys, different entities or departments that need to authorize certain operations. And in the case someone's key is compromised, this key rotation and recovery mechanisms can be set in place so that those risks are mitigated to some degree.
Yeah, because companies often have to decide as a whole what to do, and you need like all these like board of directors, shareholders, executives, like all this stuff to coordinate too. So
yeah, and even like for the individual case, not necessarily big things like organizations and companies, these functionality can be leveraged so that just simple two-factor authentication, for example. Right. So maybe you need to authorize both with your mobile device and your desktop wallet to perform certain things, to sign certain credentials, and so on. So that if one thing is lost, not everything is lost. And that's, we have many examples of 2FA, two-factor authentication things working already. So identity shouldn't be too different to that.
All right, so that's it for this episode. We talked about DID today, kind of the who, what, when, where, why, how it works, kind of some very high-level stuff. So really exciting as the technology develops. We also talked about credentials versus claims, kind of what we use in a paper-based system and how that will transition to digital, and also some concepts with identity hubs and registry. So that's it for today. We'll catch you guys next time on the podcast. And thanks again, Ben and Carlos, for joining us.
Thank you, guys. See you next one.